From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Coming up on Forum this morning, we meet another new California U.S. congressional representative. Republican rice farmer and former California legislator Doug LaMalfa joins us to talk about being new on the Hill and a range of relevant issues. Then at 9:30, the California Healthcare Foundation issued a report on mental health care in California, and we'll find out what it has to say about such matters as the geographic and economic variations in the state's rate of mental illness. Forum is next. Join us and join in next after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to this morning's Forum program. Republican freshman Congressman Doug LaMalfa joins us in this opening half hour of the Forum program. First-year congressman, he represents California's 1st Congressional District, which covers Butte, Shasta, and the northeastern part of the state. He's also a fourth-generation rice farmer who recently helped pass regulatory relief to farms and ranches, and he serves on the Agriculture and Natural Resources Committees. Was a member of the California State Assembly as well as the California State Senate, and he joins us this morning from the Cannon Office Building in the nation's capital. And Congressman LaMalfa, good to have you with us. Welcome.
Good morning. Nice to be on.
Good morning. Good to have you on. I guess I should begin by mentioning that we had your colleagues Eric Swalwell and Jared Huffman on, also both freshman congressmen, and they seem to be they're both Democrats, and I wonder if you share their optimism that at least freshman congressmen are meeting in bipartisan ways that perhaps may take some of the polarization effect away.
Well, some days it's bipartisan. Some days it's, you know, when you get to the work we do on the floor, it doesn't look quite as bipartisan. So, you know, it's a mixed bag around here. But the freshmen do have, with that incoming optimism, you know, we feel like we can exert some things and get things done. So I'm actually working with both of those gentlemen on some different projects here. So we're both interested in both sides interested in the issue with our Veterans Administration and the inability of them to seem to get the backlog of what the returning veterans or even long-term veterans have faced with getting their cases heard. So we've been trying to get some action out of that Oakland facility there to get some of these folks who really deserve to have their cases heard and be resolved.
What do you do to streamline veteran cases being heard with, well, frankly, less bureaucracy or less red tape or less holdup?
Well, one of the things you'll hear is like, well, we don't have the resources. So, you know, Congress has taken steps to see that they have the resources. Now it's just the will to get it done. There's a lot of great people that work within there, but there's also some folks that have been, you know, basically putting up some roadblocks. So we've had some concern about that. So it's a lot of it is just nudging things along a little bit. So.
I'd like to talk about other things you may be nudging along. For example, I know you're on record saying you want to increase water storage and delivery. That's part of your mandate. What can you really do up on the Hill, especially when you go up on the Hill and you're a new congressman and a lot of your work is, frankly, just raising money for the next election, to put it baldly?
Well, I don't know where that came from on that, because the next election, it's, you know, it's 2 years apart, and I've been here 6 months, and so.
Well, but most freshman congressmen or most congressmen who are new at it realize that if they're going to get reelected, a lot of time is going to have to be expended meeting with people who are donors and who are going to support them. That's all I'm saying. So I'm wondering, particularly with the fact that you're a neophyte and that you're you have other things pressing you, what can you do about something like water storage?
Well, you know, again, not a complete neophyte. I have 8 years in our state legislature, so I kind of know my way around the process a little bit, know a lot of the players and the people and the issues. And so we're applying it to a federal level here. And so with what we need to do is just, again, educating the body here on what needs to be done, you know, because we're not talking to people just in California as we do at the state level, but at a national level, and getting them to care and understand why water storage in California is good for not just California, but the whole country. You know, if our economy in California is stronger and more self-sustaining, then we're less of a draw on other aspects of the country, or the things that we produce there. The things we produce and innovate in California have a positive effect on the rest of the country. And, you know, we are 12% of the population of the whole country, so we ought to have a commensurate amount of at least positive activity. You know, so on the other hand, we see California might have only 12% of the population, but 30% of the welfare load in the country. So let's have more jobs here and give it that opportunity.
So part of your job is
adding to the water storage.
I'm sorry.
Adding to the water storage, as was the vision of people, you know, generations ago in the 60s with our state water project, and in the 30s with our federal project. You know, if we continue to add to that as our population keeps increasing, we're not, you know, we're still not at 20 million. We're nearing 40 million in population now.
So you see your job as educating your fellow congressional representatives, or enlightening them, I should say.
Enlightening and convincing and getting them to
persuading,
work towards the goals that I have, as well as me listening to them and seeing what their goals are for, you know, what does the Midwest need as for its infrastructure needs or agricultural needs or, you know, healthcare issues, what do they have? Because, you know, not everything's the same. One size doesn't fit all in any one state. So it's really giving people the flexibility to do what they know they need to do and not have a government mandate coming down from the federal level that tries to make one size fits all.
So. We're talking with Congressman Doug LaMalfa, who represents the 1st District in California. It says on your website it's the real California.
Yeah, well, we have a lot of perceptions of what California is. When people are outside, they think it's all Disneyland or all Hollywood or all the beach. Well, there's, you know, a lot of interior California where you have the mountains and you have the high valleys and the high desert and snow and water and wildlife and all that still. So there's, you know, there's another real side to it that isn't just the Hollywood perspective. So.
And another big concern of yours is frivolous lawsuits. Let's talk about that for a moment.
Yeah, certainly. That's just a drag for everybody on their choices, on economies, on small businesses, on families, because when you have lawsuits that aren't productive, you know, you don't want people to not have the opportunity to build or have a playground because if somebody falls off of a swing that they sued the existence of the swing's way because the school can't afford the type of insurance it needs, or you can't possibly build something that's perfect enough to meet some sort of liability. And that extends out to a battle that's been going on lately in California. The cottage industry of late has been the Americans with Disabilities Act drive-by lawsuit phenomenon going on. So people that are trying to comply with the law, but government won't stand behind what the law says, they do the best they can, but you find out someone comes in, hey, the toilet is only 17 and a half inches away from the wall. It's supposed to be 18, and so they get sued for that tiny variance in the law because the mandate somehow says so, and it wasn't clear when they built the building or didn't. It was way before there was a mandate. So, you know, others might be like, hey, you didn't paint the stripe in the parking lot correctly here, so we're going to sue you over that. Well, what we're looking for is that where it's reasonable, you would have the opportunity to make a correction before it turns into a lawsuit. But also, the government authority that's supposed to be overseeing this needs to be responsible because of the ADA Act federally and at the state level to say that when you've built a new building or you've remodeled a portion of a building and you've had it checked off and signed off, you should be immune from lawsuits because the government has just certified what you're supposed to have. When government doesn't do that, yet it's also the ones responsible for making the laws, then you really have people caught in an unfair and an unfortunate situation that then may, in a lot of cases, pit a small business person who's just trying to do their job. They might become an adversarial person with a person with a disability who maybe wants to be a customer. But we find a lot of cases here where the disabled person is just really a pawn in what is the plaintiff game that the drive-by attorneys are looking for in order to score $10,000, even up to $30,000 worth of settlement damages. And then they drive off and you never see them again, let alone have them stick around to see if they actually care about the correction was made to the perceived access problem. So, you know, that's just a horrible example of lawsuit abuse that's run amok. Then you have the Prop 65 ones where, you know, Prop 65 passed some years ago, and every business you walk to, they have these silly little signs they put up that say there might be a hazardous material inside this building here that you shouldn't eat or consume. I mean, sand like you find at the beach can be considered a hazardous material, whether for whatever it's being used for. If you're using it in concrete, things like that, it's still considered that. Whereas what they're getting at is that sand used for sandblasting, you should be careful not to breathe all the dust. But you got people running into problems storing sand that might be used for concrete products. So, and you can get sued over that.
We're talking with Congressman Doug LaMalfa again, who's with us from the nation's capital. And this is a half-hour segment, so if you'd like to contribute, and I don't mean as fundraising, I mean to join the conversation, or if you have questions or comments for the congressman, who's a Republican and represents the 1st Congressional District, you are welcome to join the program. Our toll-free number is available now. It's 866-733-6786. Again, toll-free. You can join us, 866-733-6786, or email us, forum@kqed.org, or post any question or comment on our website, kqed.org/forum, and click on the segment, or go to our Facebook page or tweet us. Our Twitter handle is @KQEDForum. Let me get into, if I may, just for a moment, some controversial territory with you. Not that frivolous lawsuits aren't controversial enough, but that has been brought up about, your own record and the like. The Farm Bill has been split, and it's been split in terms of the food stamps and nutrition funding. I'm just saying this for listeners because I know you're well aware of it, as opposed to supporting farm and money going to farms. But you've come out essentially opposed to subsidies and to direct payments. But as has been pointed out in a number of editorials, since 1995, your family and rice farmers have gotten about, well, over $5 million in subsidies. How does that square?
Well, again, it's we've been farming in our family for over 80 years. And so over time, these programs have evolved into what they are, starting with, you know, the good intent really back sometime in the 30s, where you had the Dust Bowl problem, which that's the conservation side. People want to, you know, see that the soil is conserved better and not all blown across the entire Midwest or what have you. And then as well, the commodities having stability in the supply of ag products. And so when you have these vast swings in the value, the price of it, you have farmers 1 year, you know, maybe earning money on a particular crop, and the next year, because the price of the crop has dropped out, bottomed out, then they're losing money big time. So I think the whole evolution of the Farm Bill and the USDA was that let's have stability for the supply of any ag product grown in this country and the price of it. That keeps the farmers farming and keeps the price stable for the consumer, and that we know it's going to be on the shelf. We know it's going to be an American-grown product instead of relying on imported wheat or rice or dairy products or pretty much anything else. If we want to go absolutely to the bottom of the market, then we've seen how that goes with oil in the past when you remember oil embargoes and other things like that. So we don't always have friendly people around the world that want to make sure we have everything we need. So I think the strategy of the federal government is that food is an important security issue that we want to continue to have it grown here, so we need to take steps to have farmers have that security that it can be grown here year after year.
Congressman, I got a lot of people who want to talk to you, and I want to get to our calls because we only have a half hour with you, but I guess what I'm really forging ahead with here is the fact that, and I'm already receiving emails and tweets about this, that you were opposed to food stamps, and many people find that troubling in light of the fact that...
Well, there's a lot of spin with that. I've never said I'm opposed to food stamps. What we've looked at is that the Farm Bill itself, leading up to this year, has been about 20% is the farm side of the Farm Bill, and 80% of it has been the food stamp portion. Okay, and so we've taken steps to change the Farm Bill from what we're, you know, has been a direct payment to now it's an insurance program. A farmer has to participate in buying insurance to insure against disaster and in the low prices we're talking about. So we got more skin in the game on this thing, which this is my first term in Congress. It's the first crack I've had at that. And I have voted to make where farmers have more self-responsibility in this thing.
So, but you say,
I don't like that we had to be in this program all these years in order to be in the black.
You are against the subsidies, though. And last year, I believe your farms got the second highest amount in the state. They got nearly $63,000 in your family farm. How do you, in other words?
I don't farm anymore, nor does any other individual if they're not in the program. Okay, because the world market price dictates what the price of rice or wheat or any of these other commodities that are in the program is going to be. And so, my family is not just going to just stop farming and be the only one that stops doing it because the program affects all farmers in that particular commodity. So, people are using this as a great talking point, yeah. But I'm working in this process to make it where we don't have to be part of this anymore and that we can go to a more self-sufficient program. This is my first crack at it. I voted accordingly in this year's Farm Bill, and it was a bipartisan effort to try and get there to, in the first round of the Farm Bill, where we had the food stamps and the farm portion of the Farm Bill were in together. That bill didn't pass the floor the other day because the Dems basically did not deliver the votes that they said they would on the Farm Bill side, so we went back and separated the two questions. Now we did the farm portion the other day, we passed that, and we're going to address the food stamp portion coming up soon. So for people out there trying to make the spin like, oh, he's against food stamps, he's against people getting what they need, that's completely wrong. There's a population out there that we want to see that gets this assistance. There's a certain level that is appropriate for people to continue to be eligible for a food stamp program. We're going to be taking that up. We're having our first meeting about it today. In fact.
All right, I just want to get you on record on this, and we've got a lot of folks who want to talk with you, so let me get as many calls in as I can here, and we begin with Bill. You're on, Bill. Hi.
Hi, Congressman. I'm a small building contractor, and we fell victim to this kind of lawsuit abuse you were speaking of earlier. Mm-hmm. It was under a state law. You can look it up on Google, sue your boss law. But what can be done to kind of rein this in, because it really, I had never even heard of the law I was sued under, and it's really restricted my ability to grow my business.
Yeah, I'm sorry you're caught in that there. We passed a bill when I was in the state Senate last year, the legislature did, was by Bob Dutton, and Senator Steinberg joined in on that. It was, if I remember the number correctly, it was Senate Bill 1186, that it took some pretty good steps towards relieving people from some of the frivolousness of this. So you might look that bill up and see how that helped you. But those effects are supposed to be taking place here to provide people relief from the drive-by lawsuits. I don't think it was enough, but it gets there. All we're looking for is a chance for people to have the opportunity to correct something that is not a blatant end-around of the Disabilities Act, but there's vagueness in the law. The county operation, the people that permit you for your buildings and such, they won't stand behind what they say is a certified law. You have to go hire a consultant out there, and even then, someone can find a vague area too. So we're trying to take the vagaries out of it. Unfortunately, the trial lawyers out there like it this way, and they like the vagaries because it's makes it where there's something to sue about. And I'm also sponsoring a bill here at the federal level this year. I believe the number is H.R. 994. That's by Ken Calvert of California, too, to, at the federal level, allow the time for correction when something is found wrong. I attempted back when I was in the Assembly, too, to say, let's take the lawsuit portion out of it and just make it where there's not the big reward of a lawsuit, but that if someone is cited for something, it would actually just be more of a fine with the opportunity to correct.
And you're fighting the trial lawyers. That's a formidable opponent.
They're good. They're tough. They have a lot of control, whether it's a state level or a federal level, and the Democrats a lot of times toe the line for them.
Well, let me thank Bill for the call, and here's another Bill joining us. Bill, good morning.
Yeah, good morning, and thank you for your stewardship, Congressman, of the water resources up north. I'm in San Francisco, but I highly appreciate your work on the water resource. I know that's important to all of us. I have another question, though, and I'm concerned about the Republican-led House voting 38 times, maybe 39 now, against Obamacare. Why is that? Well, are you one of those voting against Obamacare for, in your recent activity?
Well, we had one vote since I've been here about that, and if you're looking at how it's working out, I mean, it's not just I want to vote against things. It's let's look at the effects of what the government running this program is going to be. Now, am I going to say that everything's perfect about health care before? No, I think we need to find ways to do things. You know, when you look at things from a business's perspective, you got to find ways to control costs. And when it comes back to why are the costs of health care going up so much, you see, again, litigation, the cost of bringing drugs to market. But also, on the other hand, we're doing research and finding amazing new ways to treat people in ways that haven't been possible in the past. So it does get more expensive.
There is opposition, though, generally, I believe, in your party to Obamacare. And just wondering.
Well, that comes down to a philosophical viewpoint. If you're looking at how many things the government runs, and you ask yourself how many things it runs well versus, adding the gigantic portion of our economy that healthcare is to running that. And look, we just saw where the president has asked the other day to delay the mandate on employers. Well, if we're going to delay it, we should delay it for everybody and see if there's something about it that can be made to work instead of saddling individuals. You know, families now are going to still see the increase in costs. We're seeing that their health insurance is already going up approximately 30% by the time this is implemented, as is, say, sometime in January. You can see some people paying up to 140% more for similar or lesser policies than what they have now. So it's just a philosophical issue of, is the government going to run it well, or is it going to be out there where you're releasing people to have options for insurance they can buy, not just in California, but the different options there is nationwide, and getting back to the doctor-patient relationship, because doctors are dropping out. There are people that are close to retirement, they're saying, forget it, I'm not hanging around anymore. And new doctors coming up, they're coming into more specialties where they don't have to have nearly the hassle of running an office and all the billing. I mean, Medi-Cal, it's a train wreck for people to try and get reimbursed to see Medi-Cal patients. And we have all these different aspects of just getting doctors and patients and hospitals paid for their work that we need to be tackling it from a different angle. And honestly, when you look at how this federal mandate is coming together, there's nothing but delay and problems with it. New taxes are coming in place. You know, the Senate already passed a measure to get rid of the medical device tax that is one part of many.
I'm sorry
many taxes,
to so. Say, Congressman, I wish we had you for an hour because there's been
lots
of response here. And,
well, there's so much to explain about it. I hate to cut people short.
I know, but and I hate to cut you short because we're coming up to the end of this half hour, but I just want to read a nice little email here from Stan. It says, finally, a sensible discussion by a legislator of real economic activities that affect communities where it counts. Good for the congressman. So it's a pleasant and upbeat note. I wish we had time, as I said, to go into more issues because there are big issues. Perhaps we can get you in here maybe when you're in town. Actually, some people from your district are writing in, and I've enjoyed having you on. I'm sorry we have to end it. Thank you.
Well, I'd be happy to be on because, you know, I just want to be a forthright, open guy on this thing and talk to people about it. We may see differently on things, but, you know, we do have a heart for people that really need to have an economy and get the things that are, I think we all agree they should get from government.
Doug LaMalfa, representing First District, thank you for being with us, U.S. Congressman from the northeast corner of the state and former California State Senator. When we return, we're going to talk about a major study that's been done about mental health care in California. Stay with us. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny.